Richard Fitzwilliams, good afternoon. You're live on TRE. How are you?
I'm fine. It's quite a warm, sunny end of August in London. It's going to hot up, apparently.
Yeah, you've had a bit of rain lately, haven't you, and some cloud, but I think it's going to be nice next few weeks.
Well, so they say, and I'm looking forward to that. But nonetheless, there's plenty to see in the cinema, where, of course, it's dark, but it's got a large screen. That's the way I like to watch them.
You did send some information through, and you were talking about James Bond, the future of James Bond, really, because it is a, well, we touched on this last week, but it's a well-loved franchise, isn't it? And one of the most popular ones, you know, alongside Star Wars, maybe, and others. So it's a shame what's going on there at the moment, isn't it, with James Bond? Because there'll be a lot of fans waiting for a new film.
Well, of course, you could argue a lot of this could be publicity set up to, as it were, whet interest, but I don't think so. I think there's been a real clash of temperaments between, on the one hand, the Michael G. Wilson and Barbara Broccoli, especially the latter, of course, of the producers, and also, apparently, according to reports, Daniel Craig and Danny Boyle, who very possibly would have liked his idiosyncratic independent director. He would have wanted to put his own stamp on it. I think they're guarding that franchise far, far too much, because, as you saw with Star Wars, I mean, Bond's declined a bit with Quantum of Solace, with Spectre. I mean, it needs a revamp. The women certainly need changing, and there's no question that you need something new for the 21st century, and what you've got is very... It's a tired mix. As J.J. Abrams took over Star Wars, look how dynamic that was. What we've seen here is, quite honestly, it's a complete cat's cradle. Boyle's quit. The screenwriter's gone as well. Idris Elba's had fun with Twitter with all sorts of rumours, and apparently he's not going to be playing the next Bond. It's all very peculiar. And Daniel Craig said he'd rather cut his wrists than do so, but apparently he's been somehow, shall we say, money played, I suspect, a very substantial role in this, got back for the last one, because Barbara Broccoli believes he's the best Bond ever. But the point is, the franchise, you know, Bond will never be retired, but I can't help feeling sometimes he ought to be.
I think also, of course, James Bond, I think, was ahead of its time when it originally came out, and it's you certainly, you know, whether you're Roger Moore fan or Sean Connery or Timothy Dalton, whoever it may be, you know, for that, for each era, it played its part. And I think of late, there's been such high quality espionage spy movies around, and you can look at the Bourne trilogy and the Bourne series as well. And I suppose that's caused James Bond to look at itself and say, you know what, these films are very well made and they're very well scripted, and we've got to up our game, really, haven't we?
No, absolutely, because you mentioned Bourne. I look at Mission Impossible, the wonderful franchise. I mean, these are franchises also that have established themselves. They're very popular, and, well, Bond is Bond, and it's the fourth most successful franchise ever, and, of course, there aren't many of them, because only 25 since Dr. No, except that the 25th is having a lot of trouble just stating what I want to see is something more realistic. You're right about Bourne, but then Bourne is more realistic. Mission Impossible has got these extraordinary stunts. But with Bond's trademarks, I mean, women need changing and to become real. You keep the Bond moths in the jokes in the script. But I keep the exotic locations. Why not? I mean, the other films do. No harm in that. And no harm in quite a number of gadgets. But what they should do is become more real.
Well, I think Star Wars got a relatively good balance of late, where they've kind of introduced themselves to a new audience, and you've got, of course, with the likes of Star Wars, you've got parents my age who were brought up on Star Wars bringing their kids into the arena now as well. But they always nod to the fans, don't they, as well? That they're very good at doing that, and I think. But they've been able to move on with J.J. Abrams, you know, also with Star Trek, of course, as well. He's done a great job with them. So it's going to be interesting to see where we go from here.
Yes, it is. They've got to go to a different place, I think. You're quite right. You're absolutely right about Star Wars too. Yes, and Star Trek as well. But Bond, I think there's something about that franchise they're terrified to touch.
Yeah.
The way it's tends to be so light-hearted, Britain punching above its weight, Bond being a sort of superhero and all the rest of it, his tux, martinis and all the product placements. It's time, perhaps rather like, and I mean, Barbara Broccoli is going to hang on to it, of course, whereas George Lucas couldn't hang on to Star Wars because it had really declined. But nonetheless, I see the necessity for change.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, it's going to be interesting. I think we've not heard the last of that one, and where they're going to go from here, I think they've got more attention now than they probably wanted.
They want a release in October next year. They better get a new director.
Yeah, they better get a wiggle on. Okay, then, this one we're looking at today, Cold War. Not what I was expecting from the title, and I watched some clips of it, and it's very well shot, and it certainly is a very beautiful film to watch. But what's your take on it, Cold War? Tell us more.
Cold War is actually, I would say, a masterpiece, and I really mean that, because this is an extraordinarily moving and powerful film. I mean, it won the Best Director for Pavel Palikowski at Cannes, and the reason is because it's a mesmerizing depiction of human frailty and the extraordinary nature of love and its many moods. You've got two characters, Zula, played by Joanna Cooley, and Victor, played by Thomas Cott, totally different, unsatisfied when they're with anyone else. They need each other, and yet they can't somehow cope with each other. Not unlike, for example, almost as though they were inexorably bound together, and yet couldn't stay together. And it's a fascinating movie because there is the obvious comparison with Casablanca. It won't be anything like as popular because, of course, no one has, or few have heard outside art house cinema, of the characters, the actors. But I was fascinated because it's so lyrical, it's so poetic, it's full of movements which touch, which are profoundly moving. Joanna Kulig plays Zula, and we meet Zula first as a pupil with a pretty shady past. It's rumored she'd killed her abusive father in a music academy set in a country house in Poland in 1949. And then we meet Thomas Cott playing Victor, one of her teachers. A relationship, both passionate and eventually deeply destructive, develops between them. The academy is dedicated as in post-war Poland, and you've got the bureaucracy, you've got the repression. This is a movie shot in black and white, and Palikowski felt he had to because it conveyed the grimness of that period post-war in Europe, and it flits to several locations. We have, for example, the academy dedicated firstly to harmless folk songs, then the propaganda machine gets going and they sing odes to Stalin. They move to Berlin, where Victor, who's always he's been to the West before and he's so unhappy with the way things are going, he intends to defect. Zula intends to come with him, but she's the star and she doesn't. And so when they meet again in Paris, again their relationship keeps continuing from place to place. Victor can't live without her. She, on the other hand, has wild mood swings. And it's fascinating because it's a really extraordinary relationship between a musical star as a singer and a gifted musician who, nonetheless, is constantly obsessed with her. And yet her behavior, her mood swings, and his, and it mitigates against anything stable, and you're certainly not going to get much stability here. You begin in Poland, move to Berlin, where he defects. Then they meet again in Paris, and subsequently in Yugoslavia, where he attends a concert where Zula's actually singing. He's removed by the authorities, sent to Yugoslavia, and that subsequently again they meet in Paris when she has married a bureaucrat. It's dramatic. It's beautifully cast. I can't praise this film enough. Simply see it, because there is a lyricism in it. There's a sadness in it. It examines the human condition. Visually, it's exquisite, and every beat of the music, every footstep, the music is a pivotal part of this, because both of them are musicians in one way and another. It draws them together, and it tears them apart. So when you've got a cast that is absolute perfection, you have a movie that's, I've thought, profoundly touching.
Joanna Kulig, if I'm saying that correctly, is the lead in there, I think. She reminded me very much in looks of Jennifer Lawrence. When I first saw the clip, I thought it was Jennifer Lawrence in that role, but I was really took me by surprise. But I've not come across her before.
No, in fact, this is why the movie will possibly have a problem catching on, as it ought to, because if you have relative unknowns outside, obviously, Poland, it is tricky, because big names mean something, but best director at Cannes means a lot, and word of mouth, and hopefully the critics, will also mean something, and hopefully social media will pick up on this film, because, as I say, it's deeply moving, it's full of paradoxes. These are, and I'm no spoilers as we move towards its climax, all sorts of extraordinary things happen, but the facts simply are that it is an extraordinary experience, and when you're just listening for those footfalls of someone you're in love with, when you're also in a deeply passionate but destructive relationship, anything can happen.
Ratings out of 5, Richard?
I think definitely out of this movie, 5 stars.
Lovely. Well, I'll tell you now, you're in line with a lot of other people. IMDb website give it 8 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes, 97%. Google users, 86%. And Empire Magazine, 5 out of 5. So, there
well,
we go.
It's because it's so beautifully handled. It's almost as though something, almost as though something exquisite was being, to use the metaphor, composed, because music is such an essential part of something that's absolutely wonderful, and yet you have the total opposites, and the way total opposites attract, and the way they can't live with each other.
Okay, we move on to The Children Act, and a great actress in this, of course. Tell us more.
The Children Act is directed by Richard Eyre, and he did Notes on a Scandal, which scarred Julie Dench and Kate Blanchett to tremendous effect. It was about a teacher who has an affair with a pupil. Of course, that's forbidden. And Julie Dench's character is manipulating Blanchett's. What you have in The Children Act is a very curious, interesting, but also ultimately rather unsatisfying film. Richard Eyre directs, and there's no question that Emma Thompson gives an excellent performance as an overworked judge, Fiona May. Now, her marriage to her loving husband, Jack, played by Stanley Tucci, an underdeveloped part. He's always superb. She ceased to be intimate with him. It's deteriorated. She's looking for meaning in a highly pressured life. She adjudicates in a case where two Jehovah's Witnesses, against medical advice, request that their son, Adam, played by Fionn Whitehead, be denied the blood transfusion which will save his life. She decides to visit the patient, even though the rules are pretty clear in these cases, and he recovers after her ruling in favor of the proposed treatment, and he starts becoming obsessed with her and following her even to Newcastle, which is part of the judicial circuit, and fatefully she becomes attracted to him and the poetic way he sees the world. She needs an escape from hers. It's based on Ewan McKern's novel. He wrote the script. It's visually, it's very impressive. The problem for me was the plot. Parts of it are terribly contrived. It does stretch belief with a twist at the end that didn't convince me. And you do feel that this is a packaged movie. Emma Thompson will almost certainly be nominated in the award ceremonies for her performance, and you feel that the film has been structured around this. There's a very good performance by Jason Watkins as her fastidious clerk, And he's often hilarious. There's some entertaining judicial cameos. There's some fine court scenes. And it's a touching snapshot, too, of a failing marriage. And, yes, an insight into the emotional pressures behind the judicial mask. Personal choice, too, a question it poses. The problem also is this. I think it's very bad luck with this movie. It does deal with Jehovah's Witnesses. And you will remember we talked about apostasy recently.
Yeah.
A movie I gave 5 stars to, everyone thought that was brilliant. It's unfortunate 2 movies dealing with Jehovah's Witnesses, and one of them is totally believable. The other, there are contrivances. Compare them, and it rather shows up the Children Act. Having said that, I did think it was good overall, visually certainly, and Emma Thompson is extremely good.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't go overboard about it, because I didn't buy plots of the plot.
There are some redeeming features there, and it's certainly not a waste of time, is it, I think, from what I'm getting from you.
No. Certainly not. But Stanley Tucci, for example, I mean, the way that character is developed, again, so secondary. You see both of them appearing to get equal billing on the posters, and believe me, Orbit disappears in the movie. That's simply because the script gives such prominence to her, because I believe that, you know, she's going to get the nominations, which, fair enough, depending on what other roles we see and how that compares, it might well be appropriate. It's a movie that poses interesting questions. I did enjoy it, but it isn't anything like as good as Notes on a Scandal.
Well, again, IMDb gives it 6 out of 10. I think that's probably kind of similar to what you're saying, actually. Yeah.
Yes, I've got the 3 stars here. I've got an online review. I mean, there it is.
I think they're copying you anyway, Richard. So 3 out of 5 then for that one.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. That fits. I'd hoped that it would be. I mean, Notes on a Scandal was a 5-star movie, because the characters were all totally convincing, and I thought the movie had more depth. The Fear and Whitehead gives a very sensitive performance, and Emma Thompson is very good. Stanley Tucci is always superb, but again, as I say, the part isn't developed as it should be.
Okay, right. What are we going to look at next week, Richard? What can we expect from you?
Well, next week we have The Spy Who Dumped Me. and as a complete contrast, C'est la vie.
Okay, we'll look forward to that then. Yes, I'm glad you went with that one. I was wondering if you're going a bit old school on me there with the Bond movement. Anyway, thank you very much, Richard. If anybody wants to find you online, how can they do that?
The website is www.richardfitzwilliams.com, and Twitter @RFitzWilliams.
Richard, we'll speak again next week. Have a great weekend. Take care.
And